Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Alex, I'm eager to hear your take on The Rock's opening segment. We had him doing the talent show, singing lyrics that ripped on Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, said some, I was trying to think of the right description, like tawdry or cruel things about Cody's mom. And the crowd in Memphis is going nuts for him, chanting Rocky, Rocky. They turned briefly on him when he said that Cody wouldn't finish his story, but mostly cheering for The Rock, and he didn't really seem to be fighting it all that much. He certainly played up being in Memphis, the place he first started his wrestling career, self-deprecated a bit with the whole Flex Cabana name when he first started off. I'm a little torn on this. I think it was entertaining. It, you know, it's Rock. It's Dwayne Johnson. My God, he's out there doing a variety show. It's almost baseline net positive. But how many people watching are any more excited to see Cody and Seth beat up The Rock when The Rock's getting cheered and is being witty at their expense? And I just don't know if it's the best strategy. It feels a little different to me than Cena-Rock, where it's sort of a pick'em. Everybody take your best shot. We have that now, except there's clear heel face dynamic. So what did you think watching it, and kind of help me clarify my take on this?
So I would completely agree with you if the segment had stopped after the singing. However, I think they did a really important thing here, and Rock did too, probably more so than WWE themselves. But he had the fun. They knew he was going to get cheered in Memphis, and he leaned into that.
Yeah.
But then turned into this vicious asshole talking about how he's going to beat this guy with a belt and present the bloody belt to his mom. Like, the crowd response to that is they were just listening to every word he said. At that point, yeah. You know, the cheers and all that kind of stuff had stopped. And I think it was really important that Rock did that, and he looked into the camera, and, you know, like I said, he targeted this guy's mom. She's not an on-screen character. This isn't a situation like, and this is on the brain from the Bruce Mitchell thing, but she's not like Shelton Benjamin's mama, who's an on-screen character in Fair Game. Like, she's a real person who is portrayed as, you know, she just so happens to be Cody Rhodes' mother and, you know, the widow of Dusty Rhodes. And he made it personal. And the beginning, very witty. And normally, I hate that. I thought it worked here because he did take a bunch of, like, unnecessary pot shots. The funny part was he even took a shot at Ja Morant, who is an NBA player for Memphis, and I guess
star player, yeah,
and kind of a thug. And he missed a good portion of the season with injury, and now there's, you know, whatever situation. And the crowd even cheered that, like they acknowledged the fact that, yeah, he's probably right.
Well, so, they booed at first, and then Rock kind of tried to laugh it off and said, "I love you, Ja." But yeah, he mentioned him, like, I think he waved a gun in a nightclub, and it didn't, like, I don't know if it was, if he didn't have a, I can't remember the details because it was like months ago, but he made a reference to Ja getting in trouble for that. But the crowd did boo him at first, and then he tried to laugh it off. It's like, oh, they're turning on me. Well, I kind of get it. And he goes, oh, I love you, Ja, which I'm not even sure that's great either, given Morant's controversial actions. It was sort of like he hedged pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree. But it was one of those things, though, where I thought they booed at first because there's like, oh, they're making fun of our guy. But then they realized, our guy's kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
Kind of how I took it.
So I went on the same journey with you. I was like, how is this helping Cody or Cody and Seth, if Rock, because the most negative framing of what Rock is doing is his feelings are hurt by some of the, you know, some of the stuff that Cody and Seth said. Like, in real life, this goes back to the Cena thing where it's like, say anything you want. Oh God, those sting, but I can't admit it. So I'm just going to try to give my best shot back. And they went back and forth and it was compelling. They tore each other apart, but sort of a pick 'em for the fans. And in this case, it kind of came across like, oh, Rock's going to issue some receipts. But he did so in a way where the goal was not to get booed. And in fact, he's like, he didn't try to – a lot of times heels get cheered, and then they turn the crowd against them pretty quickly. And Rock just went into babyface mode. I'm going to sing for you. I'm going to say, you know, a mix of witty and sort of bad – witty insults and some bad rhymes. But, you know, that's rhyming for you. And, you know, all Seth does is cackle and dance and – He like the whole thing about Cody being an accident, it's like I'm not quite sure that hits as much as Rock thinks it does, like that you're an accident. Like, I don't know if people are supposed to laugh at Cody over that. Like, I don't really understand, like, whether you're the product of an intentional pregnancy or accidental within a marriage or otherwise, where that's like this great heel line in 2024. Or a babyface line, for that matter, that's supposed to thing. Like, I didn't get that. I haven't gotten it. But then I'm like, okay, at least now he's got this dark tone to him, and I'm going to make Cody and his family pay. I'm going to beat Cody's mom's son, and I'll beat Seth, and I'm going to present her this belt, a Rock leather belt. It'll be bloodied. And I'm going to say, what can I say except you're welcome? And it was a very dark, sinister tone. So I'm with you. Okay. At least at the end, like, fun and games is over. Let's get serious. But I would still argue, was it worth the fun and games to undercut all the negativity that Rock genuinely had with the WWE fan base in, you know, when this all kind of got augmented, when they had to call audibles. And now it's like, oh, here's the old Rock having fun and everyone's laughing along at his wit. But the problem is, I think what happened is the crowd just still loved him, because in the end, after that sinister, dark tone and all the things he said about Cody's mom, they chanted Rocky, like, loudly, as soon as he said his final word. So, I like promos that have – that aren't out to – like John Cena said years ago, many, many years ago, I hope we entertained you. Hope I entertained you. It's like, I never heard that on a wrestling show. It was always – entertainment was always the byproduct of this fictional world where wrestlers are trying to beat each other up for championships. We were just watching. Their goal wasn't to entertain us. Their goal was to win championships, and we had the privilege to watch them have these – amazing fights. And it's like the whole culture has changed in a way that I think is negative. And I think, like, obviously Rock's got this huge family history. He's a very smart guy, very successful, all that. That's just baked in. But is it worth, you know, maybe he just thinks, what am I going to do to fill time? You know, they're paying me. They want to draw ratings. I'm going to sing a song. Of course, I'm going to insult my opponents. Like, I get that. I'm not quite sure this promo with Memphis Nostalgia and playing into the fans' cheers needed to be as pronounced early on, because I just don't think he ever offset the current that the flow of the current that was established at that point when he got dark. And I think some viewers at home are going to be watching this going, well, God, maybe it won't be so bad if Rock gets the better of Cody and Seth. And Rock is really funny after all. So I don't know if that, like I said, I think it was all over the place. It was entertaining. In the end, yes, he tried to take the dark turn. I just think the first half, the first two-thirds felt counterproductive and out to more entertain than, quote, sell tickets. They don't need to worry about selling tickets, but you know what I mean. Alex?
It's interesting because a lot of the narrative over the last two episodes especially, but I think they had one prior to that, where Rock and Reigns were in the same place and Reigns was almost big-footed. And mm-hmm. like I said, a lot of the narrative was, is it harmful to Reigns? It's interesting that tonight, with the way Rock went, we may have found out that the presence of Reigns and the Bloodline and Heyman was actually more beneficial to The Rock staying on track and being an actual heel, because he's in the presence mm-hmm. of the biggest heel in the company. So it's just kind of interesting how that worked out, where this is the first time we've seen him in the last, I don't know, month or whatever it is, 2 months, and he's by himself, and all he knows how to do is revert back to, you know, cocky, smart Alec who cracks jokes on everybody. The thing about the jokes with Seth, the Cody stuff, I'm with you. I don't think it makes any sense. And it's funny because I like Cody, but he is a little annoying and he's a little quirky. And instead of like going after the things that he could go after Cody for, instead it's gags about Stardust and his birth, which doesn't make any sense because all the stuff about Seth is damaging because it's all true. Like, it's why it's funny, and it's also why it hurts, because literally everything Rock has said about Seth is completely true. Like, objectively, it's true. None of it is manufactured or even really a joke. It's in, like I said, it's more in the vein of, it's funny and you may not want to hear it, but it's true, and that's part of it. And he doesn't lean into any of that stuff with Cody. Like, there's so many things about Cody you could talk about that he chooses not to. Mm-hmm. And that's what's odd about the whole thing to me. But I don't know. There's a lot of ways this could go once we get to WrestleMania. A lot. And I think what's interesting the most about this, and this is like my biggest nitpick of the segment, is what's with the final boss thing?
Yes.
Because
that's new.
It doesn't make any sense. And the reason it doesn't make any sense is because the Rock is in the first match, and Cody has to beat the Rock to get the rules against Reigns. So that make Reigns the final boss. And the thing is like, if it's a setup for something later with Rock and Reigns, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, but if it's the setup for that, then it makes perfect sense to throw that out there now. But if it doesn't lead to any of that and Roman doesn't go, wait a minute, then it's really weird. And it just, like I said, it just doesn't make any sense. It's not logical. It's like they thought of this cool nickname.
Yes.
And they were like, oh, we have to say the nickname because we thought of it. It's cool. And they don't realize what an actual final boss is. Like, doesn't Seth play a lot of video games? Shouldn't he say to them, like, guys, that's not what a final boss is. We need to, like, do something different. Not that they would listen to him anyway, but still.
And then he rhymed, there's a line you don't cross, and that's of the final boss or something along those lines. And I was like, I hope they didn't just call him Final Boss because they wanted to rhyme with the word cross. Of course, they didn't. But it's like you're already doing rhymes with this nickname without explanation. That in a way almost seems like, well, there's the Tribal Chief and there's a Final Boss, which is more powerful. And so, but I mean, if you read it, like, so the real, explain the real meaning of Final Boss and how in your, and perhaps a theory on the fly, is it foreshadowing of something? Because beyond WrestleMania, I mean, because you made the point, WrestleMania, Reigns is the final boss. But does this portend Rock ultimate? Rock, what are you talking about? Rock Reigns. Like, is this name almost giving something away if you want to read into it?
And that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like,
yeah.
An actual final boss, if you ever play a video game or I mean, there's a bunch of different ways, but that's probably the most common, is whatever game you're playing, at the very end, you normally have to beat a major enemy. If we want to dumb this down to the most well-known video game, in Mario, at the end, you have to beat Bowser. Bowser is the final boss, right? All the little minions you fight along the way are not the final boss. There's usually somebody you fight right before that that allows you to get to that, which is why this doesn't make any sense, because
right.
The Rock is the one he has to fight to get to that. It would be like, and I hate comparing this situation to this, but the particular final boss part of it works here. It would be like if Triple H was calling himself the final boss at WrestleMania 30. Well, no, that's not true, because Bryan beat him first to get into the match. Like, it just doesn't work. And if if you go into the foreshadowing part of it, there's a couple things here. And one of them is that Cody wins, whoop-de-doo, whatever. And then The Rock says, well, you beat Roman, but
I'm
telling you this
boss.
Whole time I'm the final boss. Right. You actually have to beat me. Whether that happens immediately after he beats Roman at WrestleMania or they save it and do it at SummerSlam in Cleveland or whatever.
Yeah.
But they could also use it, and I think this is more likely, is that Roman points out what I'm talking about at some point, and it eventually bleeds into the Rock Reigns feud. Because I personally think, and this is part of why I'm not super crazy about where we are right now, and I may be in the minority, but I wanted the other match that entitled people on the internet cried about and took away. So we could end up in a situation, and I actually think this is where we're going, where we get Rock Reigns at SummerSlam, and yes, Cody is champion, but he's not the main event.
So it's CM Punk all over again.
Pretty much. I mean,
you're going to be because, champion, but you're not the main event.
And I think that's the problem. Like, I saw a world when this was first a thing before all of the backpedaling and changing and, you know, rearranging of everything, where we could have had Rock against Reigns at WrestleMania, Reigns against Cody at SummerSlam, and then we could have turned around and had Rock against Cody on the Netflix premiere, and that would have given us three big matches over the span of, I don't know, what is that, 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
Filled big, big shows and done big business. And I, like, of all the things everybody's talking about, I think that's the thing we're missing out on that people don't realize, because that would have been the steady build for Cody. And I know everybody wants to see him win and win the title, but at the end of the day, if he wins the title and he's playing second fiddle to Rock and Roman later as opposed to now, isn't that worse? Like, wouldn't you rather just get it over with now, and then once he beats Reigns, he's definitively the guy, instead of this nonsense of, well, you're the guy, but, you know, not yet, because we still got to do this thing that we've wanted to do for 4 years.
Yep.
So we're going to do it anyway, but it's cool. You're champion. You finished the story. Whatever. That's how
a pat on the head.
Yeah. That's how it feels to me. And I think that's why a lot of, like, the we want Cody stuff is kind of short-sighted, because if that happens, what are you going to do? Is everybody going to cry and complain again, so we end up with a triple threat? Like, I don't understand what – if that's where this ends up, how is that better, is my point.
Good point. And there are so many places it can go, that this can go. And we'll continue on this path. We have an email about the final boss that we'll get to. We've got callers on hold. So let's pause and introduce ourselves. We've got more to talk about, too. They closed with Hyatt for Bailey. And or Bailey and Dakota Kai setting, and then definitely had you know, Sky and Bailey circle each other a bit and did an angle there. And so we'll talk about that, and then all the stuff in between too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, March 15th, 2024. I am Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the website pwtorch.com. And the host of a variety of podcasts, including the Wade Keller Post Shows and the Wade Keller Podcast, and a bunch of VIP shows, too. Hope you're checking those out. If you're a VIP member, if you're not, go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Unlocks our 35 years of archives, podcasts, hundreds of retro radio shows, almost up to 2,000 newsletters, 1,800 and some, back issues available, and an ad-free version of our mobile and desktop site, and a VIP feed that's compatible with Apple Podcasts and many other popular podcast apps. You can sign up through Patreon and listen to us on Spotify, And you can also sign up directly using your Apple account on your iPhone. All kinds of ways to sign up and support us and get a lot in return. PWTorch.com/GoVIP explains it all. The other voice you hear on the show is Alex McDonald. He is a contributor to PW Torch, our website, and also a contributor to the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Alex, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks, Wade. It's nice to be here and talking SmackDown tonight.
Yeah, yeah. When Corey Graves said it's 3 weeks till WrestleMania, I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't feel as long. 5 weeks felt like a long time, and suddenly it's three. 2 weeks later, do the math. But now it does feel like it's sort of imminent. And but we got, two more SmackDowns. Is that right? Well, no, three more. Yeah, three more SmackDowns to go if it's 3 weeks. See, math. So they've got some more stories to tell here to build everything up, and they're stretching it out a little bit, having Rock show up without Roman, for instance, tonight to advance a story, a cameo from Heyman, a little promo from Jimmy. Anyway, we got a lot more to get into. But, Alex, why don't we just give out the phone number and email and then get to our first phone call so people don't have to be on hold too long here. The number is 347-215-8558. If you are streaming the show and have not called in yet but want to participate, you are invited. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to join the show. That'll flag you on our switchboard. The other way to participate in the show and contribute is via email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, let's get rolling with calls. We'll start with Mark in Westchester, New York. Mark, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about tonight's SmackDown?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Alex. First, I just want to say that I've recently found this podcast about the 90s, and it has become very popular in my life, and I enjoy listening to it every Friday. I don't know if Alex wants to mention this now, but I'm a big fan of it, and I appreciate that it pops up every Friday in my feed.
Alex, you got a fan. Do you like Alex or Patrick more? George, do you like both? Mark, I'm stirring trouble.
Yes.
Both. Good. All right. Go ahead, Alex.
It's okay. Everybody likes Patrick more, so I will not be offended.
No comment.
I completely appreciate that, though. I will pass that along to Patrick. It's a really fun time, and if you haven't heard this week's episode yet, it was one of those ones where we felt pretty good getting off the call, so I hope you like it, but I had a lot of fun last night, so I think you guys are going to like this week.
I'm still on last week just because there's so much content that gets produced by everyone, especially the Torch, but I started listening around the time of WrestleMania 9 because that's just such a weird, weird time in wrestling. But I've been a big fan ever since. So I'm glad you're on tonight, yeah. And I was able to mention it. So thank you for what you do and your contributions to Torch. So everyone who doesn't listen to it, you should give it a try.
Search PW Torch on your podcast app, PW Torch. You'll see the Daily Cast pop up. Different show each day of the week, different hosts, different themes. Alex and Patrick's drops on Fridays. It's free. You also get the ad-free version if you go VIP, part of the VIP feed. There, I got my plug in, Mark. What do you think of SmackDown?
So there was a couple things. So one, that moonsault at the end seemed like it landed right on Bailey's head. And I found out today that if I rewind it in a certain way, I can do slow-mo. And it looked like she landed right on Bailey's head. So I'm really hoping that Bailey is okay. But I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts is on that match at WrestleMania. It just seems like even with it main eventing SmackDown tonight, there's something that is not clicking for me. I don't know if it's just me or I feel like it's missing something. So I just kind of want to get your thoughts on that, the pay-per-view and the build to it so far.
Well, I like that the women had the final segment on SmackDown, in as much as that is a prestigious position, and it is. I mean, you're not going to see Pete Dunne's tag match in the final spot, probably. And so you want to put the women's WrestleMania, one of the two women's WrestleMania title matches in the main event slot on SmackDown, just for the optics of it, just to send the message, hey, this is not, we're not just, yes, it's, I mean, when Rock is in town and you got Cody's story being finished and all that, I mean, it's hard for the women this year to compete. Other years they've been a little closer or have, you know, been right in the same realm. That said, yeah, I mean, there's been the story arc, but it's been, you know, more about Bayley and Dakota, but at least Io got in the ring and really got in her face. I think they, you know, checked enough boxes to, again, it was more about optics and what happened, because, I mean, it's a, sort of a side issue, all the DQ finishes. Now we used to complain about distraction finishes and interferences, and now we just don't get finishes. We get DQs instead of tainted pins after shenanigans, and that's sort of a thing Levesque is doing this year that I think is, he's overdoing. And people are going to stop investing in near falls and matches if it's high a percentage end in DQs. But that said, I mean, I thought there was heat on damage control. The idea is get Bayley over as a babyface. You know, Asuka interfered during the match. Damage control is creating distractions. Bayley looks like she's fighting against a pretty strong tide of being outnumbered. So, I mean, I think it checked enough boxes that it worked for what it was trying to accomplish. Alex, what do you think?
I think what they did tonight worked. I think part of what the problem has been is, if you think about it, the story so far has had little or nothing to do with Bayley and the title, and specifically Io Sky. Like, she's basically feuding with Dakota Kai right now.
Yeah.
Which was a loose end they needed to tie up. But in hindsight, they might have wanted to do the, like, will she, won't she thing a little bit longer, and then maybe had Kai be Bayley's first challenger after she won the title, just because of the fact that, like, up until tonight, Io Sky has been a complete afterthought as this champion. And it's funny because the design of the titles and the men's titles they mirror are actually the polar opposite of the men's titles, because the one that Rhea holds is significantly more important, one that Io has right now.
Right.
And that's kind of been the problem, I think. And I think it's why you feel that way about the build, because all of the build has been centered around Bayley's feelings are hurt because damage control turned on her and because Dakota Kai is a bad friend. Like, she doesn't talk about Io in the title at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, ever. It's never mentioned. And it's like, why did you win the Royal Rumble to win a title if you don't even really care about it now that damage control is broken up? It's almost like she wants to beat Io to prove she's better than damage control, not because she wants to be champion. And I think that's a mistake. I think they tried to rectify that a little bit tonight, because if you notice in the final image, it is Sky standing over Bayley with the title, and she is the central figure as the rest of damage control is kind of crouched down in order to make tiny little Io Sky the central figure. And before that, they went out of their way to have the stare down with Bayley and Sky with everybody else kind of out of the picture. And she laid down the title in between them. So I think they're making a concerted effort to fix that problem, but it doesn't mean that they've done a good job so far.
I'm back. My dog was flipping out outside, so I had to go see what was going on. Mark, your follow up on that?
No. I agree with everything you said. It just, it's been a rough build, but yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, in the next couple weeks, they put some more importance, because, you know, like Alex said, like, Io does not seem like the focal point of the feud. So we'll see what happens in the next couple weeks. The next thing
there's three episodes to go, and I agree that should be a focus of theirs. As we like, to me, this is the part that I was going to add, is the story's been about Bailey and Dakota. I would have liked to have seen Bailey beat Dakota tonight, have maybe interference fail on behalf of Damage Control. Give Bailey that momentum. Can she really not beat, like, Dakota clean? She's going into a title match, and then that shifts the focus because now you've settled that in pro wrestling parlance. Bailey got a win despite interference. Can Bailey, does that now show fans Bailey can beat Io Sky despite interference? And to me, that was the more obvious story to tell, and I was surprised they did the DQ finish to protect Dakota, because it does, it feels like that, I think fans are going to feel like, well, we haven't really turned the page, or we haven't moved past Dakota now. Alex, just your quick thoughts on that.
I completely agree, but I mean, I'm always one of those people that, for the most part, if you're going to set up matches like that, just beat them. Like, just, especially when one of the two people in the match is in a, I shouldn't say is, but what should be a headline match at WrestleMania, they should just win. Like, this person won the Royal Rumble, which this company acts like is basically the second or third biggest accomplishment you can have. So if you have enough faith in the person to beat everybody else and win the Royal Rumble and have this illustrious honor, then they should have no problem beating somebody who, let's be honest, in 6 months, what's Dakota Kai going to be doing, you know, once all of this is over? Like I said, if Bailey wins the title, that's probably your first challenger. She'll beat her and move on, and then we probably won't see Dakota Kai in a prevalent spot at all.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, back to you. I know you were about to shift to another point.
So the next thing I was going to bring up was the U.S. title picture, and I really thought it was just going to be a one-on-one match between Orton and Logan Paul. So I was just kind of just curious on your thoughts about them making it three-way.
Yeah. It feels – I'm still trying to figure out what's going on here, because you've got Logan, a heel, effective heel. People don't like him. Now facing, because of sort of babyface but sort of heel GM Nick Aldis, putting two babyface opponents against him. Why? I mean – what did they do to earn it? Why does Logan have to face both of them? It feels like, well, we don't have anything for KO to do, so we're going to throw him in a match that otherwise would have been Logan and Orton. So I just, to me, it puts Logan in a spot to feel like you might feel sympathy towards him, because he's got to deal with two opponents when he didn't, other than acting like an ass. I mean, he didn't, that's not in wrestling. That doesn't mean you have to face two opponents. So Alex, what's your take on it?
So, did you ever play musical chairs when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, WrestleMania sometimes is like musical chairs, right? And you see, everybody had a chair that they wanted to have a chair, except for Kevin Owens. So, they found another chair so he didn't feel bad. And this is the chair. And that sucks, because it's so clear to even, like, the most casual person watching that that's the case, because for all intents and purposes, like, they had completely moved on from the Kevin Owens and Logan Paul thing. Like, at Elimination Chamber, they pretty much wrapped it up. They set up the thing with Orton, and then they furthered the thing with Orton last week. And then we get to this week, and they're like, oh, wait, we don't have anything for Kevin to do. Let's get him back in here.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest issue I have with it, because, like I said, even if you're the most casual person watching, it's so clear that that's what happened. Anyway, the thing as far as the actual match goes is I agree, but I'm going to take it a step further. They've spent all of this time portraying Logan Paul as an attraction and a guy who you have to see his matches, and with the exception of the one against Ricochet, which was a spectacle, it is what it is. He's only been in there with people who are considered big stars, like whether you want to talk about Rey Mysterio, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and I know people like to crack on The Miz, but whether you like it or not, people who don't watch wrestling know who The Miz is. So he fits the bill too. Putting Logan Paul in this instead of just against Orton makes him feel like just another guy to me. And I think that's a big mistake. Like, in hindsight, I almost would have rather they had gone with LA Knight against Logan Paul and given Knight some of that rub. Yeah. And then you do the legacy stars who have nothing to do WrestleMania triple threat with AJ Styles, Orton, and Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
In hindsight, that probably would have been the better move.
Yeah, I like that too. I'm fine with Randy Orton against Logan one-on-one also, and then throw KO in the LA Knight AJ Styles feud, since AJ's sort of a weird suddenly heel. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I would you could rearrange it in any way, but of those three, the option I just threw out as a slight alternative to yours or your scenario or the one they're doing, is my least favorite. And Orton and Orton just deserves to have, I mean, that's a big match. I mean, Logan Paul's a star. Randy, it was gone for a while. Now he's back. That could have felt big. And I love Kevin Owens as a performer, but he just feels extra here. And then maybe there's a storyline. Maybe KO and Logan are – maybe KO's going to turn on Orton and Kevin Owens is going to become Logan's hype man. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, maybe they have something in mind. Not that I like any scenarios that come to mind as far as that goes, but it's still – then you're going to look at it and go, oh, they booked backwards from an endpoint and did some things that make no sense to get there. So, yeah, I'm just not a fan of it because it just feels arbitrary. And I think Randy and L.A. – Randy and Logan makes more sense. Is a better attraction, yeah.
The biggest problem with Owens, and it's been this way for a while, and you bring up like him turning on Orton, that's dumb. Like the two people who need to stop turning are both in this match, and it's
yes.
Orton and Owens. Like just stop.
Well, AJ too. Maybe they could have a triple threat where the loser can no longer turn.
There you go.
Yeah.
Also, the winner can no longer turn, so that way only one of the three of them is allowed to.
I like that.
But the problem with Owens at this point is that he is the definition, if you look it up in the dictionary, of utility guy.
Yes.
And they use him to every extent of that word. And it's gotten to the point where, like, I used to be really excited to see him, but now nothing he does feels important, and even if it feels important for a minute, like last year's WrestleMania, for example, or the year before, nothing happens after the fact, so who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he never transitions into anything more than what he already is, so it's funny because he's that guy that they just stick in whatever spot, but it never turns into anything, so it's hard to get behind him in any, you know, real way. And this is just yet another example of that.
All right, now, Mark, I'll throw it back to you. Any follow-up on that?
No, nothing on that topic.
Yeah.
My next topic was maybe I missed it because my dog also had a freak out during SmackDown, but did they mention anything about the Hall of Fame and the Muhammad Ali induction or – I didn't see anything, but I could have missed it.
I didn't notice either. Did you, Alex?
No, that was definitely not on the show.
Yeah, so not sure why.
I found that a little just, you know, strange because I know they made a big thing about Paul Heyman, and I kind of fast-forwarded through Raw. Did they mention the U.S. Express being inducted on Raw? Taking that in now?
Wyndham and Rotunda? Yeah, they mentioned that on Raw. That was on Raw
this
week.
Okay.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of...
Yeah, they were in...
Sometimes you got to fast forward through Raw.
Yeah, they were in the graphic. I don't know if they were mentioned by name, because I'll be honest, I was doing some stuff around the house when I was watching it, but they were definitely on the graphic with whoever else they announced, whether that was... The Japanese woman. I feel terrible. I'm forgetting her name right now.
Cool. Well, kind of.
Boldicano?
Yes, Boldicano, yeah. Yep. They were either on the graphic with her or Heyman or something. I don't know if they mentioned it, but they were on the picture.
Yep.
Right. Mark, last thing.
Go ahead.
Closing words, don't worry, Red. Just a quick shout-out to Kyle in Baltimore, because I'm very curious about him. I hope he's doing okay. But I know he was a big WWE fan and a big Sasha Banks fan. So if he ever pops back up, I'm just curious if he's watching her in AEW and his thoughts and feelings on that. So if he ever pops back up, Wade, just, you know, kind of ask for me. And
yeah,
that's all I have for you guys. And yeah, I appreciate you both. And go VIP if you aren't.
Thanks, Mark. Good talking with you. Good topic. Thanks.
Thanks.
Our number, 347-215-8558. Call us. Push one. We'll go to Joe in New York next. Joe, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Good evening, Wade. I just want to talk about the Rock segment a little bit. But let's go back just a step. You just had the Rock 3 weeks in a row. Did WWE really get what they should have had of him for those 3 weeks? I mean, last week you threw him in the last 10, 12 minutes of the show. They ran out of time. This week you did the other segment, and people are not playing their roles right. I mean, you got Rollins, he coming out there like a goof every week, wearing his wife's sunglasses. I mean, you're in a main event with a real main eventer. You're not in there with the Miz. Get serious. Act the part. And the same thing with Cody. Last week, he was such a turnoff when he goes, the four of us should take this moment in for a minute. This is not the Hall of Fame or A&E biography. You're doing the segment live. You got to act the part. I mean, these guys don't know what they're doing. It's ridiculous. That's not a place where you say that. You're in the middle of a segment a month away from WrestleMania. What are they doing? Get serious. I mean, I liked one thing Rock did today. When he did the whole mama thing, he said one very important thing. He said, your son took something from me. He took the WrestleMania spot. When he said, you took something from me, that's what he talked about, the WrestleMania spot. That should have been me fighting my cousins. And I think that was key. But I don't think they used the Rock the right way the last 3 weeks. They could have got a lot more out of him. They all should have been there tonight. Rock's not going to be there next week. I doubt it. Maybe he comes back for the go home, but I think they missed their opportunity there.
Alex, broaden out our discussion to open the show. What do you think about how they've been using Rock overall, and what kind of position are they in with 3 SmackDowns to go and not 3 Rock appearances to go, probably?
I actually thought they got the most out of him that they possibly could. I don't know what else you could do. If he's not going to wrestle, I mean, and let's be honest, that was never in the cards for any of these 3 episodes. I mean, I guess if you wanted to draw ratings, you could have done a bait and switch, which we actually, you know, a lot of people bandied about a few weeks ago after Cody's challenge. I mean, if you want to look at it from a rating standpoint, you would have pissed people off. But I mean, I guess you could have done that. But otherwise, I mean, what else do you want the guy to do? He gave 3 promos, all of them escalating. We got a face-to-face with the team they're wrestling in the middle. You know, he's made the feud personal, talking about Cody's family and all that kind of stuff, and how Seth is less of a star than his wife, which everybody else says too, because it's true. And I mean, I don't know. I didn't have much of a problem with it, and I'm not. if you ever listen to my show, I am far from the biggest Rock fan in the world, and I actually have enjoyed him the last 3 weeks being alongside Reigns and the Bloodline. And I don't know. I don't know what else they could have done that's feasible and would have made sense, given the fact that they're on Fox and only have so much time. I mean, I guess a minor critique is they could have moved the segment last week to the beginning of the show, But that's such a nitpick at this point. I don't know.
Should Rock – did Rock mention the Bloodline by name tonight?
No, and he probably should have. That's like, a good call-out that we did not talk about.
That's my kind of large – as I look at kind of the big picture with Rock, he's cut the Bloodline comes out to Reigns' music, and then Rock gets his entrance. The Bloodline stands on the right side of the screen from our perspective. Rock on the left. We get ahead of the table. Yes, I acknowledge you, but it's sort of – it's not believable if Rock is subservient to Reigns. But it would work if they felt like they were true, enthusiastic partners in crime and that Rock is there to put over the Bloodline. The Bloodline's the biggest deal in professional wrestling the last few years. The Rock isn't. The Rock is a bigger deal worldwide, but the Bloodline in the industry that made him, that his family, where his family wrestled, that's the biggest deal. And he's coming in and seems not extra like Kevin Owens in the Orton-Logan Paul match, but he seems it's a sidebar. It's an appendage, but it's not immersed in the Bloodline. And so to me, what we could have gotten out of Rock the last 3 weeks is the Rock going all in on the Bloodline. Like, if you're going to join the Bloodline, I know it was an audible last-second call and all that, go all in because it'll make the split feel bigger if it seems like either A, Rock really wanted to be in the Bloodline and was enthusiastic and all in, or it was a ruse, but it was a convincing ruse. And we don't have that now. Rock just seems like the Rock who's visiting but not living in the Bloodline world. Else.
I agree. He did mention Reigns, which is good and important. Like, he did mention that it's important to him that Reigns remains the champion. The problem, too, is even when he's present with the entire Bloodline, like, has Rock ever even acknowledged Jimmy's existence? He's mentioned Heyman and Solo.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In the Rock's world, does Jimmy Uso exist?
I mean, part of that is, this is the thing. If I rewind to imagining Rock joining the Bloodline or hanging out with the Bloodline and going back more than 3 weeks, when it seemed – so I would have imagined the Rock playing into and off of the politics that have gone on. And – Rock comes across as somebody who, kayfabe storyline-wise and in real life, has no idea what's been going on with the Bloodline for the last years. Like, just no idea.
Well, but
and he's not interested in learning.
But here's the thing. He can't play on the politics that have gone on in the Bloodline because he's a heel. Right now, he's supposed to be a part of them, and he can't bring up that, oh, Roman, you've bullied all these guys, and I'm gonna fix it. That's probably what we were going to get, but you can't do that now because the whole thing has been changed. So if Rock brought all that up and was sitting here telling Reigns he needs to get his house in order or whatever terminology you want to use, it doesn't work because that's not the Rock we're getting anymore. So I get where you're coming from, and you're probably right. He probably doesn't know. But in this context, I think if he brought that stuff up, it would be more hurtful than helpful.
I think there's a way to do it where he shows knowledge of it, even a passing comment. Like, we heard earlier from Jimmy, who's going to take out Jay. Have a position on that. Like, put over that match. Say, you know, hey, Jay, I saw you earlier. Instead of singing and getting cheers from the Memphis fans and telling a self-deprecating joke about Plexus Cabana to show you have a sense of humor about yourself and you're disarming, whatever his, you know, modus operandi is when it comes to this stuff when he's as big of a star as he is, I'd rather have him come out there and say, I got business to take care to talk about regarding the match I'm in and the main event. But you know what? I saw what Jay said. I saw what Jimmy said. And talk about Jimmy and talk about what he wants to see him do to Jay because he's part of the Bloodline and he should want to see Jimmy crush Jay because Jay betrayed the Bloodline through the lens of where Rock stands now. You can tell that story. So that's just an example of it. I would like to see some semblance of something that they're building on with what Rock thinks of Solo. Does he think he's funny? Does he say something that causes Reigns to do a double take, but it's just sort of a subtle hint of something? You know, like, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but like, we don't have that. We have no like tentacles of Rock's thoughts and interpretations of the Bloodline to play with on a show like this and talk about, because it's possible that Rock has no idea of any of this and has no interest in learning. Now, I'm not saying that's true. It's not like, if you watch the show, there's no evidence to the contrary of that. There should be. It should be obvious Rock is invested in Bloodline, knows their history, and is trying to put other people over and other things over, and he's not. So that's answering Joe's question. What they could have gotten out of Rock is he could have given a rub to others and made it seem like the Bloodline is very – it's important that he's part of it, and he's acknowledging the history of the Bloodline – and that he's walking into a situation that has a history, and now he's merging with it. And instead, he's standing off to the side, doing his own ring entrances, and not talking about them. So that's my answer to Joe.
I see what you're saying. I took it more in the context of him attacking Reigns for the problems. But now that you put it that way, you're right. He could have gone out of his way to say, you know, Jay turned his back on the Bloodline and now Jimmy's going to teach him a lesson or something. That would have sufficed for showing the knowledge. You know what I mean? The other part of it too, and you bring up Solo, and I'm so disappointed that he's been lost in all of this, but I really wish that when Rock brought up that he's the one that is going to make sure that Cody doesn't leave with the title, or that Seth doesn't have his title anymore or whatever, I wish that he had brought up, and believe me, if I don't make sure, Solo will. That would have gone long way towards establishing that, well, I have all this power as TKO guy, but that guy is the enforcer. You know what I mean? Like, so now that you bring that up, I do wish he had done that.
Yeah. All right, cool. Let me bring Joe back on. Joe, any response to our conversation here?
As far as Rock with Solo, he thinks nothing of Solo. He showed you 2 weeks ago when he said Solo was going to sing the national anthem. And you could see Solo was not happy about that.
Yeah.
So I don't think he has any thought on Solo. And the other guy, all the other members in the Bloodline, they just fall in the background when The Rock is there. It's The Rock and just a little bit of Roman. I mean, like I said, The Rock, even if he doesn't want to, it's just the way he conducts business, his personality takes over the screen. And what do you think? I was wondering, Wade, do you listen to The Rock segments on the Instagram? Because he's cutting all these promos like before the shows.
I
didn't either.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe. Sorry. Yeah.
No. I was just wondering if you've been following that, because some of that stuff he's saying, I believe, like when he says, hey, the Netflix deal got done because the Netflix wanted to know if The Rock was going to be a part of the business. In other words, Netflix wants him involved, and I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's going to be around. This is not going to be his last match. He's going to have at least 2 or 3 more matches after this, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm told the impression within WWE, and they keep things, you know, as close to their best as they can, is that Rock will not be around much after WrestleMania, but he'll still be involved in the follow-up from WrestleMania. Like, it'll be a name that's brought up. He will, and there'll be a countdown clock knowing he's going to come back, that kind of thing. Alex, have you been watching the social media Rock promos?
The podcast I listen to that plays snippets of them, which is helpful, so I don't have to sit through all 20-something minutes that they are. So I have a basic idea of what he said. On the Netflix front and The Rock, I brought it up a little bit earlier, but I would bet a good amount of money that whether The Rock is in a match or just on the show, the debut on Netflix will feature The Rock. I strongly assume that.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, he's on the board. They're playing that up. I don't know if it makes a ton of sense laid up on TV. I don't think it's a huge deal either way. But And we have an email on it too. But the idea of Corey Graves saying, "Oh, Rock really whatever made news with his social media promo." It's like, well, that goes to the Cody Rhodes thing. Do we now, is this AEW where we need to watch shoulder content to know what's going on? Can you fill us in if we were busy today and didn't have a chance to see it in the few hours before SmackDown? Like that, I think viewers are sitting here going, well, what did he say? And so I don't know. It's just why, what is the point of it? And is there more negative than positive? I don't think it's a huge deal either way. I don't think it's a huge positive. I don't think it's a huge negative. But it's sort of annoying when Gray's like, oh, man, you won't believe what Rock said. But no, we're going to go to the live segment of the ring. It's like, what did he say? How is it relevant? Should we seek it out? Go ahead if you want to say more about that.
No, I was just going to say, I think when Rock, I could be wrong on this. I don't know any of the video game things about this, but just the actual, when the Rock says final boss line, I take that as a shot at Triple H. In other words, I'm the one that's going to be deciding the outcome, not you. Now, I could be wrong on that, because like I said, I don't understand the video game stuff, but I think that's a direct shot at Triple H when he says that. In other words, I'm the one that's going to decide who wins and who loses.
Yeah, I mean, it's a conspiracy theory, but it's not anything I can push back on as having a semblance of like an underlying subtext meant to express a power struggle behind the scenes that, yeah, I mean, I'll say that. Alex, what do you think?
I didn't think about it in that context, but I mean, if Triple H is the game and The Rock is the final boss, I guess we can read into it from that standpoint. The funny part about the whole thing, and we didn't talk about this before, but like, the veiled shots at Triple H and like the stuff they did previously, I don't think anybody mentioned that they had like one of the biggest rivalries in the history of this company, which is weird. And the other part of it too, and it's kind of back to the promo tonight, you would think the match at WrestleMania was The Rock against Cody.
Yeah.
Like if you watch that promo tonight, like, it feels like it's The Rock against Cody to decide the rules for the match against Reigns, and Seth Rollins is at ringside. Like, that's kind of how it feels. That's off topic from the Triple H thing, but
yeah,
I don't know. That could just be a play on words with, like I said, the game thing or whatever.
Cool. Joe, anything else you want to add or follow up on this?
Let me just swing on to LA Knight. You know, one thing about this guy, I mean, I like him for one reason. He acts and talks like a wrestler, especially if you're somebody who grew up in the 80s and 90s. That's how a wrestler acted. That's how a wrestler talked. And it's kind of a lost art because nobody does that today. So I think that's why he's so popular. And I think sometimes they miss the boat with him because whether he's 41 or 31, it doesn't matter. Just ride the wave a little bit. The guy is popular.
Alex, what do you think?
Like I said earlier, I think they kind of missed the opportunity with him as far as he probably should have been working with Logan Paul. It put him in a little bit of a bigger spotlight. At this point, though, they want to do the thing with AJ, and I like AJ a lot. This, you know, he's in his late 40s. He's in the back end of this, but he has a name to an extent, so they're going to have Knight do that. Again, much like we talked about before, I would bet Knight wins and then moves on, and, you know, maybe he's doing something more come SummerSlam. But as popular as he is, I will be very honest and say I think what we saw with him against Reigns is probably the highest he's ever going to get. I get it with the popularity and people really like him. I just don't think the company themselves want to invest in him. And Triple H has talked about it previously as far as some of his ideologies and things like that. And he said you can't push everybody at the same time. And I think Knight's kind of a victim of that right now.
Joe, I agree that LA Knight is more on target with doing a straight kind of timeless babyface, you know, confident with bravado babyface promo. Not a lot, you know, there's no meta stuff, you know, it's just, he's just out there getting himself over, reacting to the crowd and talking about his opponent. So there is something to be said for that. But boy, it's a crowded field right now to stand out.
I'm not saying to make the guy a champion. I'm just saying give him, don't make him an afterthought either. But I don't actually mind him with Styles. Yeah. It gives Styles something to do because they kind of just put Styles on the background for like 5 years. I mean, he should have been much more involved in the product. I mean, I'm not saying to make LA Knight the champion, not at all. But I'm just saying, don't make him meaningless. Make him meaningful. He can still be on. Make him a upper mid card. Make him a guy that matters. See, like with Gunther, I don't care that he's champion for 600 days. You know why? It's not him. I respect the reign. The reason it doesn't matter who wins is because the division has not been elevated. The mid card division is still, it's not, it doesn't feel upper mid card. It feels like it's just a bunch of lower guys that can't get into the main event picture fighting for the title. The Intercontinental title itself doesn't feel important. It's impressive that Gunther's held it, but they haven't done a good enough job raising the rest of the division, so it doesn't really matter who beats them because they're going to get lost in the shuffle as soon as they win the title.
All right, Alex, any thoughts on that?
I do agree that they have not done the best job with kind of building people up in the background. Part of the problem with that is on one side, the U.S. title was kind of traded back and forth, and it didn't really matter. And now it's on a Sato celebrity. And then on the other side, you have Gunther dominating everybody. And for a little while, he and Reigns were on the same show, which was extremely problematic because basically any credible challenger just got pushed down pretty quick. So I do agree with you that they could do a better job of building guys up in the background. But I will say right now, and it could be like the cross-pollination thing between Raw and SmackDown with Rock and Reigns and Cody and Seth. But I do think right now they are starting to do a good job of that because Randy Orton feels important. And I actually do think as much as it's like the mid-card WrestleMania special match, LA Knight against Styles is probably like the third or fourth biggest program on SmackDown right now. Like you could make the argument that it's neck and neck with Logan Paul and Randy Orton. And maybe just because the two guys aren't as big as stars as those two, it feels less, but the way they're treating it, I mean, they've given them TV time over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So there's hope for all of them to kind of jump back into the picture as WrestleMania culminates and we move into the next stage of WWE heading into the summer.
Very good. Joe, any closing words or final topic?
No, that's it. Have a good weekend, guys.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. You too. Good Bye. Comments from Joe. We'll now go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's in your mind about SmackDown or things we've talked about so far on the show?
Well, way to get to talk to you as always, my friend. And Alex, I feel like it's been a long – I mean, I think you were on once before, like, lately, but I feel like I haven't talked to you in ages, man. How are you? It's good to have you back on here, man.
It has been a long time, Sean. It's good to hear from you.
It's good to be heard, that's for sure. No, you guys have had some really awesome conversation, man. It's been fun to listen to. I've just been, like, enjoying listening to it. I'm like, man, I got a lot to chew on. Well, going back to The Rock, the segment itself, and you guys have talked about it a lot, but I wanted to give you just my viewpoint of what I thought watching it. So when they first said, or when I first saw that he was going to do the music or the song, I really kind of put my head in my hands. I was like, oh, man. Like, I love The Rock. He's funny. But we really need the serious tone to this, and I really don't like that, you know, we're going off. So that's what I initially thought, and I really didn't like it. And then, you know, I did like the serious, you know, tone that he did at the end, but it was hard, like you said, Wade, because it was like we're already – the fans already been chanting Rocky the whole time. They're still chanting Rocky, and it's like you can't – it's hard to get them to switch like that. And then when you guys have been talking about, yeah, I think – him not really addressing the bloodline a lot, you know, in what he's talking about, it does make it feel kind of secondary. And it does a little bit make Roman feel sort of secondary. Not, he's not secondary, but it makes him feel that way. And so somebody had actually brought up, you know, going into the, just the match, you know, the kind of the thought going to WrestleMania was, I do think they might go with, you know, Roman turning on Rock during the tag match. Because everybody's assuming that Roman and Rock are going to win, which, I mean, could happen. They could end up going that route and having all the rules to have, make Cody fight more things. But have Roman turn on the Rock, make Roman like, okay, I'm the biggest thing here, and then have, you know, lead to their match, have Cody, you know, win, finish his story, and then kind of see where they're going from there. But I want to hear what you guys thought about that. But that is my thought of the segment. I still thought the segment overall was fine because he got to a serious. But to me, they didn't. I'm with Wade, with you, in the sense that they didn't need to go to all that, the song stuff. I just think when you're doing this kind of a serious storyline, you need to be as serious as you can and not go to these kind of rock jokey songs. And so what do you guys think about that match? Do you think Roman might turn on the Rock in that tag match? Or where do you think they might be going in the – kind of the lead to the WrestleMania, and how do you think they're going to do these next couple weeks with Roman? How do you think he's going to act going into these next couple weeks?
Alex, I'll throw to you.
So as far as Roman turning on Rock in the match, I don't know if he will turn on him and cause him to lose, but I have had a thought that as a make good for all the clown emoji and the fact that the guy has just been relegated to the background, as well as the fact that, by the way, I think he's going to lose to Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a strong possibility that they go with a situation where somehow Seth pins Rock the tag match.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is the case,
yeah,
then Roman can then blame it on the Rock, and that can be part of the impetus for where we go after the fact, which could lead to maybe a bloodline beatdown on the Rock that turns into the Rock seeking revenge and helping Cody win the following night. I don't like the second part of that, but I am fairly confident in the first part just because I just have this sneaky suspicion that the way they've torn Seth down so much is, and the reason he's allowing it, and the way he got in Rock's face last week, I think there's a small chance that he's the one that wins and pins the Rock in the process. Maybe not, but to get to where you're bringing up with a Roman turn, I think it has to be something like that. I don't like the idea of Cody beats Rock and then beats Reigns on night two. So I do think if Rollins and Rhodes win the tag match, then it will be Rollins that gets the win. I just think that's what will end up happening. But at the end of the day, I think you're probably right that Roman and Rock somehow win to stack the deck against Cody so he can win with the deck stacked, a la, you know, John Cena, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan, and every other major babyface this company has had since the beginning of time. I think that's more likely. But if what you're saying comes to fruition with a Reigns turn, I think that's about the only way it happens.
Sean, what do you think about Alex?
No, I think that's a good point, Alex. Because, you know, Seth has felt so much in the background, and he's been, you know, getting away from his match with Drew, like, you know, Todd had been talking about, and focused on the bloodline, which, I mean, it's a big deal, but at the same time, you do have a match with Drew you got to worry about, too, and it's for the World Heavyweight Championship. So, yeah, to get Seth a big win like that, knowing he's going to lose to Drew, for sure. I mean, I'm with you. I think Drew's obviously winning. He has to at this point. Yeah, that's a good point. I like that a lot. And I want to go back to what you were talking about real quick, too, is the, you know, Bayley-Dakota Kai, you know, match and, you know, follow up with what they've been doing there. I'm with you guys as far as EO is totally – I've been saying for a while EO's been an afterthought. It's been disappointing because I just – the championship on her just feels meaningless. And it's sad to say because I love EO and there's going to do some good things with her. But right now it just feels like she's got a prop. And the Bayley story has been, you know, fun seeing her turn back face. It's been interesting because she's, you know – they're getting her in the sympathetic light, but I would have liked to have Bayley get the win for sure. But I think the story they're playing into is keep, you know, having Bayley fight the odds to where when they had last week with, you know, Naomi coming out this week and then Bianca not, I think they're just playing into that. Well, Bianca, well, she's not coming out because I can't trust Bayley yet. I haven't seen enough to trust her. And so I think they're just kind of, they were playing that up tonight, but I still think Bayley should have won. You could have done all that afterwards. I just don't think you can have a finish to a match, but still have interference afterwards and cost all that, you know, and do all that storytelling that you're doing. So I just wanted to, you know, I didn't like the way they finished that match.
Yeah,
but then
no, I'm with
you. I wanted to switch gears a little bit with, because we haven't talked about it at all, with the Santos Dragon Lee match, because number one, they've already had this match quite a bit in the last few months. And they really defined down Dragon Lee a lot tonight. They really did. And I'm not saying is Dragon Lee going to be a big star for them? I don't know. Maybe not. But I think you could have had a lot more invested in him than what they did. And I thought they really hurt it big time tonight. It was really, really bad the way they hurt him. Now, the storytelling with Santos and Ray was cool. Like, Ray coming out was fine. I think the match is going to be really good next week. I'm assuming Santos wins. I think he kind of has to at this point to develop this heel character that he's doing, which is really good. But what did you think about that match and how quick it was and how I just really thought if you're going to do something with Dragon Lee, that's not going to help. That hurt really bad, in my opinion.
So, Alex, I'll throw to you again on this. I want to hear your thoughts.
So, I think they think it won't matter in the long run. Unfortunately, they make Dragon Lee out to be a big deal and like the second coming of Rey Mysterio. Like, he's going to be the next big masked guy in WWE. And then they do stuff like this tonight where he loses in 3 minutes. And like, I get that there was a lot of interference, but he kicked Escobar's ass and then Escobar hit one move and beat him. Like, that's not good.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no excuse for that. And it's funny because we talked about the main event and them doing the DQ. If they were going to do the DQ spot on this show, it should have been here instead of the main event.
Right.
They should have gone with the clean finish with Bayley and Kai and done the DQ here. The biggest problem that I had with it is kind of what I talked about a second ago. They pump up Lee to be like the next big masked superstar and talk about him that way. And then in this segment tonight, he's quickly thrown aside for Carlito first. And then, oh, don't worry, the real guy in a mask shows up and saves the day.
Yeah.
With Mysterio taking all the shine away from anything Lee could have gotten out of that, and the guy's just gone, was a huge mistake. They could have used 25 different people on the roster in that spot tonight instead of Dragon Lee, and it would have been more beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Hindsight being 2020, they probably should have just left him in NXT. But it's funny, Sean, you bring up if he's going to be like the next masked superstar, like they talk about. Is it possible they lost faith in him and they in fact think the next big masked guy for them is the other guy? Is his name Axiom? I've only seen him work like once or twice. I think his name is Axiom, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
So it makes me wonder if they've started leaning in his direction instead. So now Dragon Lee's like an old toy that I don't care about anymore.
I haven't asked around at all about things, but I'm curious if something you know, specific happened for them, whether, yeah, I mean, I could speculate on half a dozen things that causes sometimes management to sour on someone, but I'm curious if any of those are present, or this was, oh, Rock's segment ran long, we had to cut something, no one's going to remember it. I mean, I wrote this in my TV report at pwtorch.com. It could be any number of things that caused this, so I don't read too much into it, but the damage, there's some damage done by this. I mean, they were framing him as something special to, like, invest, you know, it's like the long-term investment in somebody. Like, start investing in him because he's going to be a star someday. And now it's like, oh, analysts are like, sell the stock. It's just get out what you can. Get out now while you can still get something. That's what tonight felt like. Whether that's true or not, you know, that's how I came out of it. And I think a lot of fans who might have been invested in him are disinvesting. So we'll see if they can recover. But yeah, I mean, yes, he had a little distraction. I mean, but it wasn't enough to make up for the statement that seemed to be being made.
While we're on this topic, it kind of reminded me of something because we're talking about how people are framed. Did anybody else notice in the LWO against Legato match that the announcers were talking up Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde like they're this force and they've improved so much and all this kind of stuff? Like, what is their record on SmackDown? Like 1-4?
Yeah. Yeah. Where does that come from?
Yeah. It's not good.
Like, Graves and Barrett have been really good. And I think I mentioned it like multiple times over the last like month they've been together about times when they bring up stuff that I think is pertinent and it's like you aren't used to hearing it. It's like, oh, good for those guys. But tonight, saying stuff like that, if you're somebody like the three of us who watch this show every week, it really hurts their credibility. Because anybody with a brain that's watched these guys wrestle more than five times is like, what are you talking about? Like, they literally never win. And didn't Escobar beat them both up by himself? Yeah. And what is he, like 5'4"?
I know. Sometimes the announcers are told, here's how we want people to think about these guys, and it's kind of gaslighting us as viewers.
Yeah.
Sean, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I mean, they went on NXT, but that's not good enough. I mean, that's not good enough. And, I mean, that's a good point, Alex. It hurts their credibility. It really does. And again, I love the two of them together, but yeah. So the last point I wanted to bring up was probably a little bit about the tag team stuff going into the six-pack challenge at Mania. I thought both tag team matches tonight were really good. I really enjoyed both of them, actually. Mm-hmm. And I will say, Wade, I wasn't as by Pete Dunne stuff as you are, but I'm annoyed now. I'm like, that's all he does now, it feels like, is he's doing the arm stuff, bending your arm and bending. I'm like, okay, enough already. Like, it already looks kind of bad anyway, and it makes the guy look stupid by just holding his arm there for, like, 2 seconds. It's like, if he's going to – just get your arm out of the way. Like, stop holding your arm there. It's like, oh, it annoyed the living daylights out of me tonight. But what do you guys think about what they've done so far at the Tag Team Challenge and what you think might happen next week? Because I think the Angel and Berto against Bate and Dunn is going to be a really fun match, and I'm intrigued who wins because I really don't know who they're going to put over. And I think both need a big win, so I want to hear what you thought about the tag team stuff and just the matches tonight, where you think they might be going. And I appreciate you guys very much. Alex, good to talk to you. Wade, you're one of the best, and go VIP. You're missing out if you don't. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Sean. Awesome. I think grabbing someone's finger and snapping it backwards and the announcers marveling at the years of training it took for him to be able to do that is one of the dumbest things that's done in professional wrestling. I just can't get over it. How is this still a thing? And it's like, oh, he snapped his finger. No, he didn't. That's stupid. Of course he didn't snap his finger backwards. He's continuing to wrestle. It's not dangling by the skin and tendons. It's so stupid. Alex, take the tournament. We learned there's brackets.
So I'm a little confused. I thought that the two teams that won tonight are in the ladder match already. They're going to wrestle each other now?
Yeah, they're in a mini bracket. I think this feels like AEW circa 2021, 2022, 2023. where it's like something happened on social media and then all the viewers are supposed to understand it. I don't know if the announcers understand it.
I thought they told me that Angel and Humberto are in the ladder match.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
I'm very confused now. Yeah. Anyway, I'm super disappointed. I do think that Bate and Dunn are going to end up in the ladder match. I pretty much pegged them from the start. Mm-hmm. I think them DIY are probably shoo-ins. I imagine that the Profits and AOP will eliminate each other somehow so that they can all wrestle each other in the biggest six-man tag no one cares about at WrestleMania. And then I would imagine that somehow we get – I said DIY already, but I would imagine Imperium ends up in there too.
Uh-huh.
Beyond that, I have no idea. And I thought for sure Pretty Deadly would be one of the teams. And if we're talking about like if we're going down the Dragon Lee route of guys they pushed that mattered that like don't now, I am incredibly disappointed. And to the like pulling on the fingers thing, Pretty Deadly would have been the perfect team to show up with like mittens on so he could grab their fingers. Like, why didn't they do that?
I mean, I guess it might be hard to wrestle in mittens. Genuinely.
Oh, it's for the gag. They like, what do you call it? They show them like duct taping mittens on in the back, and then Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate rip them off and snap their fingers anyway. Would have been a funny gag because like nobody does anything like that. And if somebody did, it would be Pretty Deadly. Like they would get these really nice bedazzled mittens and tape them on. But
yes. No, I could totally see them thinking they're going to outsmart Bate and Dunn, and it just, you know, immediately just they rip their mittens off and they throw a fit going, well, that didn't work. And
But anyway, I'm super disappointed they're not going to be in this ladder match. If they do like a last chance type thing, I really hope Pretty Deadly they put in there.
I could see that. I could see them doing a last chance thing. Yeah. All right. Let's wrap up callers with Jason from Australia. Jason, welcome back. Again, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, thanks, Wade and Alex. After watching tonight's show, you know, I've caught up the past couple of weeks or so, sort of gotten to the point where I'm just giving up on making predictions and just going to allow things to play out as far as the main story is concerned.
I'm kind of there.
I'm kind of tapping out on it. I'm just allowing it to play out. The one thing, I brought this up, I agree with Alex in the sense I see a big role for Seth Rollins. What I see, and I'm only going by on what they've said, because Rollins has talked about that this is much bigger than everything, and he's talked about sacrifice. If he doesn't get the pin on The Rock, I can see him sacrificing in a way during a match, which sort of takes him and maybe The Rock out, or something to that effect, right? Something where Seth Rollins does something big, where he gets, you know, from a storyline point of view, injured, so he's easy pickings for Drew McIntyre, but at least he can say he made the sacrifice. And without him making the sacrifice, Cody doesn't get that title shot, which is a point you can lead to later on. But the overall premise of what Alex is talking about, I do see something massive for Seth Rollins in this match, but I'm only going by what he said, how it's bigger than everything. But as far as The Rock's promo tonight, obviously, it was entertaining. I'm only trying to get inside his head and trying to think of what he's thinking, that he's going to get cheered anyway, so I'm going to give the people the chance to cheer, but then I'm going to cut this really dark type of promo to show people that I can switch between this fun-loving babyface who can make fun of people and everyone laughs to this serious heel where I'm talking about family and I'm talking about Cody's mother. So it's almost his way of showing what he can do. And I was thinking he may have been thinking he would have gotten maybe a little bit more booze. Maybe he underestimated the situation. As far as him calling himself the final boss, I don't think he's looked into the actual technicalities of what the final boss means. It's just, it sounds cool and he's the boss and I'm dressing like the final boss. So I don't think he's really thought too much into it, if you know what I mean. For him, it just sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I think overall, I'm done.
It's what someone going through. That's what someone going. Sorry, Jay. It's what Seth might say someone going through a midlife crisis would grab onto out of pop culture to try to seem cool.
Well, that's, yeah, to an extent, you know what I mean? But I guess, you know, I was disappointed last week that Rock didn't come out to the Bloodlines music. I thought that would have emphasized what happened the previous week where he said, you know, Roman is the tribal chief. But I just, my initial thought always was that Cody and Seth were going to win and Rock was going to have a change of face, if you like, or a change of opinion about things leading into night two. And not that he would help Cody win the match, but he would thwart the Bloodline because Roman would go against the Rock and say, forget about what the Rock said. This is what I want. You know, we are going to have Bloodline rules. And the Rock would say, no, you're going against my word. But now, I don't know. You know, there's a part of me, Wade and Alex, that thinks that they're sort of winging it as they go along, but they have an overall plan. So they've got the main plan in line. And the main plan is, the destination is Rock versus Roman. So how do we get there? And has the Rock said enough things and done enough things where the people can't be for him? But I think they're trying to really thread the needle here. But the final destination is the Rock versus Roman Reigns. How do we get there? And is the Rock going out of his way to try and make himself seem still entertaining somewhat so when he does turn, the people are with him? I think they're playing a very interesting game here, so to speak. And then you got to remember, you know, Cody said to the Rock, do you have the authority to make this match? Now, is he saying authority because of Reigns, or is he referencing the past with Triple H? I've just gotten to a point, Wade and Alex, where I'm like, you know what? As a fan, I'm just going to allow it to play out. I've got my ideas, but I think if you think too much of it, you're going to have a bit of a head spin.
Yeah. I wrote the cover story of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter this week, and like, you know, WrestleMania's top match is taking shape, and I spent most of the time on, of course, the men's side of things on the top, and it's just like, this could happen, and this might be the reason why, and here's the clues for it. But then this could happen, and this might be the reason why, and here's been the clues for that. And there's another scenario that's not even a, you know, it's like, and I like that. I mean, I'm fine with that. I don't want it to be, you know, fait accompli. This is what's going to be the final scene at WrestleMania, and we know how they get there, and we know the fallout. We think we know Cody's going to have the title. We don't know for sure, and there's enough, you know, fun alternate theories to at least keep us, you know, from just assuming it's, again, just a complete, obvious 100% lock. But then how do we get there? What's the fallout? You want the story to be about Cody, but there is the everything else going on with Rock and what happened the night before. It's one of those things where, like, it's like the beginning of the NBA playoffs where it's like, well, it really depends upon who wins the play-in tournament and then what happens, or, this number seven team is actually better than the number two team because they are number seven because they had three other top stars out for half the season, and so they're likely to win. That'll shake everything up. And so you can't predict the finals. But once you get a couple more rounds in, you can. Then you're like, all right, now we can make some – we might be wrong, but it's not just chaos, and there's just so many things that can happen. And that WrestleMania kind of looks like the beginning of the playoffs rather than when you're just almost – you know, when you're in the conference championship spot where you kind of have a sense of how things could go, or, you know, a couple directions. So I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't need to make a prediction with confidence, but I think it's fun, Jason, to run down scenarios that and why they might do it and the pros and cons of it. So that's kind of the zone that I've been in. Go ahead, Jason. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that nothing, and I'm not saying I'm complaining about this. So we get, like, we're all, you know, we're big. We followed wrestling for a long time, all of us, right? And, you know, people that listen to this show, you know, love it. That's why they're listening. That's why they pay their membership and whatnot. We don't always have to know what's happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think sometimes as fans, we fall into the trap of wanting to follow all the tea leaves, and it must lead to this. But let's remember, you know, it's good that they've got multiple options, so it's not all predictable. So I think, but all we ask for is that when they get to that destination, it makes sense. That all the clues that they've dropped along the way have mattered for a reason. Yes. That's all I care about.
Exactly.
So when I hear Drew McIntyre talk about, is it smart, we got to look to work with The Rock, you know, I think, okay, that's interesting. You know, he's mentioning The Rock and working with them. Then I think about Seth Rollins talking about some sacrifices are worth it. Is he going to sacrifice himself during this match because it's all worth it? So all I want is a little hint that they've dropped along the way to mean something, So when they hit the final destination, which I might not have predicted entirely, it all makes sense. And I think, and I have enough confidence in them, in this creative team and under Triple H, that they'll get there. I'm not saying everything they're doing is perfect with everything, but I have a little bit more confidence in them. Now, just a couple of other things that were raised in relation to LA Knight. I mean, you got to say to yourself, if LA Knight's not competing for the World Heavyweight title or the Universal Championship, there's only two other titles he could really go for. He's not going to be going for the Intercontinental. And you can't, and as much as I'd like to see him with Logan Paul, because I think that'd be great promos and a great match, if he's not going to win, then you're not going to put him in that match, right? So obviously, he has to have something with AJ Styles. And I think this is a point we get with a lot of wrestlers. We talk about, it seems like they're either stagnating or they're not progressing where we think they should be, given the momentum they have. But there's only so much you can do with them, and there's only so many titles. Because then you fall into the trap of introducing another title because you feel like they need something to go for. But now you've got too many titles. And to me, Wade and Alex, it's always like, for me, like the philosophy of booking. To me, that's probably the toughest thing if I was a booker. How do I keep people strong if they're not vying for a championship, but I need to keep them in a personal feud and keep them simmering so they stay hot when we finally want them to go for a championship? So you've got something like Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, right? So Kevin Owens feels like he's sort of out of place in this match, but I've noticed that, you know, Kevin and Randy, you know, they're sort of overdoing their friendship and whatnot. You know, does this lead to a Kevin Owens turn? Do we really want to see that? Probably not, but what else are you going to do with him? I mean, he main evented WrestleMania last year with Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's in a match. They have to do something with Kevin Owens. So they're sort of slotting him into this match. So I've just got more sympathy to, like, the booking, the creative process, because you can't always push someone at the same time, and there's only so many titles they can go for. So what do you do in the meantime to keep them relevant? And as far as the brackets of the tag team is concerned, the way that I see it, I think they're having these qualifying matches to actually get in there. So if we play that out and it's a six-pack challenge and there's six tag teams, that means that there's five teams that are... It means that there's 20 teams overall. There's five brackets, right? And there's four teams in each bracket. Is this WWE's way of saying, trying to tell the audience that we've got enough tag teams for, say, two divisions? Because we're going to be... Are they saying we're going to see 20 tag teams? Because I've seen the theory that what some people believe is that in this match of WrestleMania, we might see the situation where two teams grab the titles each, leading to a split of the championship. So, you know, Raw has theirs and SmackDown has theirs. So is this WWE's way of saying, hey, we've actually got a strong tag team division for both shows because we've got 10 teams on each show? This is me trying to make sense of things, why they would have these qualifications brackets.
Alex, I'll throw it to you if you want to respond to that. And if you, I did bring up the brackets on the screen, by the way, and it doesn't say they're facing each other. So, and they did say two teams from SmackDown and three teams from Raw are going in. So I think bracket one is just the SmackDown bracket where two teams get qualified, and bracket two is three qualifying matches on Raw and three teams make it. But I don't know. I'm a little bit confused. But Alex, I'll throw to you with that comment as my preface.
So that would be a total of 10 teams. When Jason said 20, I was like racking my brain to find like,
yes, there's 10,
seven other teams that exist in this company without them like just throwing people together. But I mean, they're showing off the tag division a little bit. What's interesting is they foreshadowed like a major announcement with the tag teams, and I guess this was it. I'm a little surprised that they're not going further with that, because I actually thought the announcement was going to be something along the lines of splitting the titles back up, because they have had a renewed focus on adding teams. You know, they bring in Bate and do that deal. They brought AOP back, DIYs back together. You know, Pretty Deadly got called up. I think the Creed brothers got called up too. So there's been an emphasis on that recently. So it would make sense to split them back up. Whether it's funny because you brought up having more titles in your previous comment, but I think that's a possibility. I think at the end of the day, the whole the whole tag team ladder match is their creative, entertaining way to get the titles off of Judgment Day without somebody beating them, to be completely honest.
Yep.
And I don't know who that's going to be, but it'll at least transition us to that. And they could even do, I pray they don't do this, but they could even do a cutesy finish where Bate and Dunn and DIY are all on the ladders together and they each somehow magically grab different color tag team belts and they split up the titles that way. Again, I hope they don't do that, but I wouldn't put it past them to do something silly like that.
Yeah. Jason, back to you. If there's anything you want us to comment on in addition to what Alex just did, or if you want to bring up anything else.
No, not really. I'm just trying to make sense of the tag situation because the bracket is confusing, because the way it came across to me is that Legado would be facing New Catch Republic next week, and then the winner of that match qualifies for one spot. Do you know what I'm saying?
I get that, and we thought that. I mean, that's another working theory. They just haven't explained. I get why you said that. I went back and looked at the graphic and freeze framed it, and it just says bracket one. It looks like a tournament. It looks like what you're saying is true, except for the fact it didn't say versus, and they didn't. I don't think they announced that it's a match. So it's just, I don't know. I just don't know on the spot here what the plan is.
Yeah. So either way, I mean, here's the thing though. Let's say they do split up the tag team titles. One of the constant complaints, and we even hear this in AEW, when is the last time anyone's ever said, oh, they're booking the tag team division well in WWE? I mean, we all have nostalgia for the late 80s and the early 90s, right? But when was the last time we ever said that this tag team division is rocking? I mean, it just seems like this is one of the constant complaints of fans. And even in AEW, now people are complaining about the trio. So I'm just saying from a fan's point of view, I mean, I don't know what people expect. It just seems like it has never been booked right. Because again, once you build up a tag team to go against another tag team, right, and that tag team loses, well, then what do you do with them after that? You know, you've got to put them in a personal feud, right, to get people still interested in them. But they don't seem to be doing that. They just sort of fall by the wayside. So to me, I think of all the things booking and trying to work out, it's sort of the tag team division and coming up with personal feuds to keep these other tag teams interesting while you've got the main tag team. So, you know, I'm one of these people that actually don't mind having one tag team champion moving across both brands, because I don't see them, I have no confidence in them booking a tag division on both shows that's going to keep people interested. I mean, what do you guys think about that? It just seems to be, this has been a constant criticism of fans that the tag division is no good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, the idea with tag teams is they're tag team wrestlers for a reason, because if they were big enough stars to be a big star, they would be singles wrestlers, and the tag division is supplemental. It's a complement to the main product, but it isn't the main product, and as much as sometimes lip service is paid otherwise, tag team wrestling is going to be secondary. Alex, I'm not advocating that it has to be that way, because I've advocated for the idea of top stars like KO and Orton, for instance. I'd like to see them go after the tag team titles as a team if they come up short against Logan, and take on Priest and Balor if they still have the belts, like that kind of thing. Like I like main eventers who are a little out of the singles realm getting into the tag division, and I think that elevates it. And then you can have tag team specialists against single stars who are teaming together, and I wish they did that more often, because I think there's a lot of benefits. But Alex, your thoughts on what Jason has said?
I like the idea of having one set of champions too. The problem is the one set of champions that we have right now are never on SmackDown, like ever. And that's part of the problem, is that if you're going to do the traveling champion thing, the champions have to actually, you know, travel, and they don't do that. So it feels like we have all these teams on SmackDown that do nothing. To your other point, tag team wrestling is one of my favorite parts of wrestling in general. So I wish I could have more faith in them to book it appropriately. But, I mean, we just talked about a little bit ago how they brought in Pretty Deadly, and I had high hopes for them because even when Elton Prince got hurt, they were still getting segments on TV, and I was like, okay, this is good. They didn't forget about him. And here we are 2.5 months later, and they've done absolutely nothing. So I'm with you 1,000% about splitting up the titles is probably the worst idea as far as booking the tag team division correctly, because we've seen in the past that when they have two titles, we end up in situations where there's literally three teams on both shows that just trade the titles back and forth. So I'm with you as far as that goes, Jason, on the booking side of it. But again, the single champion thing only works if the champions are actually going back and forth. When they just sit on one show all the time, it kind of hurts the premise of it.
Yeah. Jason, back to you.
I'll let you guys go. I've really enjoyed the conversation, listening and enjoying listening to other people. And I think my main overall point is I'm just happy to see things play out. But as long as we've picked up on clues along the way and they all make sense, that's all that matters to me.
You and I are on the same page, Jason. Thank you. Good good to hear from you. Hopefully you keep this up and can join us in the future.
All right. See you guys.
Yep. Take care. All right. David emailed and said, I have come into the topic late, but I took the final boss, as Rock referring to his role behind the scenes on the board. Last week he mentioned how he was Cody and Seth's boss because he's on the board. Maybe I missed something in tonight's promo. I mean, I think it's baked in that he's said, I'm your boss. I think the key is that we're adding to it, and maybe we should have sort of stipulated as a baseline. We know he's calling himself the boss because it's not just a nickname out of nowhere. It's because he's on the board and he's made a reference to being Cody's boss, which I'm not crazy about being integrated into the canon of on-air stories, but that doesn't matter too much. So the issue is, where did Final Boss come from? And does Rock know what that is in a video game? Does he care? And is it a shot at, now that he said, you know, Roman, you're the tribal chief, he's saying, yeah, you might be the tribal chief, but I have an even bigger title I've just made up. You know, if you're the supreme leader, I'm the ultimate leader, and ultimate beats supreme. You know, like, is that what's going on? Or is it meant to plant a seed for something down the line where it's the final boss versus the tribal chief? And they just think it's a marketing thing, and Rock's like, oh, I like that. Let's do it. Could be all those things. Alex, anything you want to add?
I hope it's just for something down the road. I'm more okay with that. To the other part, though, he is also not the final boss at TKO because that's Ari Emanuel. So Rock, in any context, does not know what it means.
I agree. Okay, we've run long here. Anything you want to add to our topics here before we wrap up?
So there was somebody not on the show tonight that's been on SmackDown pretty consistently recently, and I've been a huge fan of her so far, and I'm really disappointed we didn't get to talk about her at all.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on Tiffany Stratton?
She's on a medium track to being a big centerpiece star in the women's division and is improving as she goes. I don't think she's on a mega fast track. I don't think she's on a super slow track. That's kind of where I am. I mean, I was talking about, you know, do you want to get dropped into WWE when it's WrestleMania season? If there isn't a clear spot for you to be at the top, if your goal is to eventually be at the top, kind of like Braun Breaker, you know, be like, oh, get elevated Braun. It's like, no, until you don't play someone at linebacker, if they're a quarterback, you're just waiting for a quarterback spot to open up. Then you call them up, you know, then that's when you feature them. So I don't, yeah. Why do you ask and what do you think?
Oh, she's a star.
Yeah.
Like, they are in such a good spot right now. The only thing that they've done women's division wise recently, as far as like preparing for the future, that I think they screwed up is they had a couple women from TNA in the Royal Rumble. They signed the wrong one. like I have no idea what the point of bringing Naomi back was. She is in a worse spot than when she left, and she may as well not be here. They should have signed Jordan Grace instead. But as far as like the future of the division goes in a positive way, Jade Cargill screams star, and Tiffany Stratton has gotten better every time I've seen her. The big gripe I had was she wasn't getting a reaction at first because her music was like so generic like video game creator wrestler music.
Mm-hmm.
And they fixed it because they added that tippy time thing at the beginning. So now everybody knows it's her. And now she automatically gets a reaction as soon as the tippy time thing comes out. And the mm-hmm. thing that I like about her the most, she's a good worker and she's getting better.
Yep.
And I think in a year she will be significantly ahead of where she is now. And that's super promising. But they have a problem in the women's division, and it's existed for a long time. And you've talked about it, and I've talked about it. But there's a lot of women who have worked here for forever, and I still have no idea who the hell they are. Tiffany was on TV for 3 minutes, and I know exactly who she
yep.
is,
yep.
exactly what the motivation is. And then she works in the match, and the names of her moves make sense and go with the character. The way she works makes sense, goes with the character. That is so important and so impactful as they, like, move her up the card, is that as soon as somebody turns on the show, within a couple minutes of watching her or watching the entrance or whatever, okay, got it. I don't have to sit here and question it. And to me, that's what stood out the most.
Yeah, I mean, when you are, like, it's just a meal kit. Like, everything is just there. You just open the box up, and then there's everything you need. Like, that's what she is for WWE, to be a WWE capital S superstar who actually ends up being a small s superstar, the actual definition of the word. All those pieces are there, and that's why I say I think she's medium-tracked. You know, she's not just going to be thrown into the main event this WrestleMania season, but once we get past it, I think, you know, Paula Beck's, I'm sure he's already thinking post-WrestleMania in terms of the top matches. But, you know, some of the other stuff, he's deciding as he goes. And, like, well, how quickly do we move Tiffany into a spot where we might want her to be in a second from the top pay-per-view match that feels epic and she can really tell a story? And does she have enough range and polish to her promos and her presentation to carry that those aspects that go beyond her ring entrance and having a good TV match? And we'll find out how they feel about that in terms of, let's not rush her too quick, or no, she's ready, let's strike. And I think we'll start finding that out in May.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah. All right, cool. Alex, thank you. Always love talking back on with you, or WWE in general too.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Wade.
Yep. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to our callers and our email yeah, we'll talk to y'all next time. So we welcome your feedback as always. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com.